The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Hi there, welcome into the show. I'm Adrian Healy, back in the big chair. And as so often happens on Europa League nights, our agenda is overflowing. Indeed, Nicky Bandini and Mina Rizzocchi from the Serie A Awesome podcast will be on board a little later to try and break down what exactly is going wrong with Juventus. But first of all, we have to start, don't we, with Spurs, as we welcome Don Hutchinson, Shaka Hislop and Stuart Robson to the show. Guys, I'm sure you all saw the comedy horror movie In Bruges. Well, Spurs had their remake tonight in Antwerp. It was, it was just a horror, basically, wasn't it? Going down by a goal to nil, despite having 57% of the ball. Jose Mourinho made four substitutions at halftime and made a fifth after 52 minutes. It couldn't alter the outcome of the game, and predictably Mourinho was in a sour mood post-game.
It's not for me to individualize and to bring some names to the table. You prefer to do that than myself. You always ask me before matches why this player is not playing, why this player is not playing, why this player is not selected. Maybe now for a few weeks you don't ask me that because you have the answer.
Jose Mourinho went one step further, going to Instagram. Look at that, he's down with the kids. Taking a photo of himself on the bus, saying bad performance deserves a bad result. Hope everyone in the bus is upset as I am tomorrow, 11 a.m. training. Jose on Instagram. Where do we start with this, guys? I'll start with you, Dom. What did you make of what was a pretty shambolic display tonight from Spurs?
It was, and I thought Jose was spot on in his comments. And I think he's probably alluding to Dele Alli when he dragged him off at halftime, like he has done of late when Dele Alli's actually made the matchday squad. And I thought it was a tad arrogant, really, from Jose when he picked his starting 11 and he played Ben Davies at centre-back. He played Dele Alli. You know, he played a sort of second string side, thinking it was going to be enough against Antwerp. Antwerp were sensational, by the way. I thought they played some cracking football. And I thought one flattered Tottenham because they could have won it by two or three. But Jose will be fuming because that performance was nowhere near good enough.
Mm. Shaka, yeah, plenty of changes. Obviously, the game's coming thick and fast. But no excuses. I mean, this is Antwerp.
Yeah, but listen, Don is right. Antwerp played really well on the day, showed the form that they are, sitting top in Belgium, 100% in this competition as well. But when you think Spurs against Antwerp, it should only be one result. And Jose Mourinho took the opportunity to give some of his fringe players and some of those that he's trying to work back into the squad, or so he keeps trying to tell us, an opportunity. And as much as he says in the post-game press conference that he doesn't want to call names, when you make four substitutions at halftime, I don't think you need to. It's there for everybody to see. The fact of the matter is Spurs have been playing incredible football all season long, ever since that opening day defeat against Everton. They should be sitting top of the Premier League, but for the most ridiculous handball decision you've ever seen against Newcastle United. And that's all he needs to say, that those players are trying to work their way back into the team and simply haven't done enough to somehow drag the press into this and the questions that they ask about whoever. I thought ridiculous as far as post-game press conferences go. The performance was poor, and I don't think Jose Mourinho did anybody out there any favours either. It makes it all the more difficult for everybody.
And that's just it, isn't it, Robbo? They've started to lure us into thinking, yes, they've turned the corner. You were starting to think they were title contenders, Robbo.
Well, I think most people have said that they've got a really good squad. They're playing well at the moment. They've got a manager that's won before. But tonight proved that maybe the squad's not as big as you think, because Bergwijn, I don't think, is quite good enough to play at the top level in the Premier League. I don't think Dele Alli's playing with any confidence. He seems to have lost every sort of aspect of his game at the moment. Gareth Bale's certainly not fit, so he's not going to be much of an influence at the moment. The centre forward, Vinicius, who came off as well, he's good with his back to goal, but he's not going to run in behind too many people and score goals. And he chose to take off Lo Celso, one of the midfield players. If it was me, I'd take off Harry Winks, because I'm not sure what Harry Winks gives Spurs. I think he's too square with his passing, he goes backwards, he keeps the ball, but there's no penetration with his passes. And he was one of the major problems with Spurs' performance today.
Mm. Don, if you're in that locker room, how did Jose Mourinho's comments after the game go down? It was classic Mourinho, wasn't it? Just saying, listen, now you have your answer as to why some of these players aren't playing. What are you thinking if you're one of those players?
Well, you know, I think you get an idea when Jose comes out and relays that message to the press. And Jose's always been the master. He's always been the master of going into press conferences and leaving a little bit on certain players without mentioning names. I think, you know, if you're someone like Dele Alli tonight, who's been under so much pressure, you know, he's not in great form. We've all been there as players when you're in a bad moment in your career and you can't make matchday squads. And then when you get given the opportunity tonight, that was a chance for Dele Alli starting the game tonight to, you know, put a real marker down to Jose and all the millions that are watching around the world, but especially your manager. You want to convince him, because Dele Alli needs now to get back to the training ground. He needs to work hard. He needs to look himself in the mirror. He needs to stay behind. He needs to get in early and do all the right things to convince Jose that he's worth a starting berth. He gets that tonight and doesn't perform. I mean, I lost count of how many simple balls Dele Alli give away. So at the end of the game, when Jose comes out in the conference and says, you know, more or less exactly what we're thinking, if you're Dele Alli, you know, and players know, when you're in a dressing room and you're not playing well and a manager goes into a press conference and calls out one or two individuals without naming them, you know it's you. Mm. And that's tough to take. But, you know, it's no charity football. You know, you've got to work hard and you've got to take bad performances on the chin. When you're flying like Dele has been over the last couple of years, you know, rated as one of the best central midfield players that run on. He's attracted attention from teams like Barcelona and Real Madrid. He's a mile off that at the moment, but he can get back to the level, but it's going to need some hard work and he's going to need to convince Jose.
Yeah. Shagger, what sort of reaction to words like that inspire in players, in your view? If that was you sitting there and your manager had just come out and said that.
I take exception to it. Listen, I understand what Don is saying, but listen, as a player, you know when you haven't played well, and you have those discussions within the dressing room. But to have your manager go and say that to the press, I think it does more damage than good. We saw what happened when Jose did the same, and albeit with calling names at Manchester United, and how he started to lose individuals and eventually the dressing room up at Old Trafford. And my fear is exactly the same is about to happen here. Listen, it's if let's we use Dele Alli as an example here. It's always difficult coming in as a fringe player, coming into a team that you've made a whole lot of changes. There's no cohesion. There's no continuity. So it's a tough ask anyway. And then you don't play well, and you expect the manager is going to tell you exactly that in the dressing room, and you accept that. What you don't want, and what certainly I as a player wouldn't expect, is the manager to then go to the media and say exactly that. And without calling names, everybody knows who he was pointing the finger at. At the same time, Jose Mourinho starts the press conference by talking about how good Antwerp were. And Antwerp were very good on the night. Stick with that. I don't see the reason to then throw your own players under the bus. I think that's counterproductive. Yet still somehow typical Jose Mourinho.
Do you know where I think Jose was clever? Because Jose not mentioned any names. You know, and all of a sudden now, if Dele Alli goes and knocks on Jose's door and goes, "Were you talking about me?" Jose goes, "What, you paranoid?" So straight away, Jose's smart, because he's waiting for the player to come and then knock on his door, because the player knows he's played poorly.
I accept that, but that doesn't help. That doesn't, him going to the media, even not calling Dele Alli's name, doesn't help Dele Alli. Whether Dele Alli has a lawyer in his corner when he goes knocking on Jose Mourinho's door doesn't matter. It doesn't help Dele Alli. And that, for me, is Jose Mourinho's first job, to help his players. Those who are struggling, help them get better. Those who are playing well, keep them on that kind of run. I think what he does doesn't do that. And that's neglecting his own duty.
Robbo, is there any way back for Dele Alli? We've talked about him a lot already, but it has been a precipitous and lengthy fall now for him from where he was 2 or 3 years ago under Pochettino. It's so frustrating, isn't it? Is there a way back for this player?
No, because, and we go back to the point, Jose Mourinho doesn't want convincing. He probably wanted two of those players not to play particularly well. So, as he just said, I can say to the press, see, that's why I'm not picking them. And Dele Alli knows that Mourinho doesn't fancy him. Probably Bergwijn knows that Mourinho doesn't really fancy him. That's never going to change because Mourinho doesn't want them to perform particularly well. He's stuck with the players that he's got in Lamella. He likes Lamella. He likes Lucas Moura. He likes Harry Kane. He likes Son. Dele Alli's never going to get back to the form that he showed 2 years ago while Jose Mourinho is the manager, because the manager doesn't fancy that player and is not going to give him that many opportunities. And when he does give him the opportunities, he's almost hoping that he fails.
Adrian, can I give you what Endon Bele has said in the press over the last couple of days? Because he was getting a lot of criticism from Jose Mourinho. Mm. Jose called Endon Bele out in the media over in the UK, probably about for the last 2 weeks. And Endon Bele said, you know, regarding the Jose criticism, he said, it didn't hurt me, but it didn't motivate me neither. Mm. So I side with Jose, really, because it's all about the player. Jose said a couple of weeks ago when talking about players and motivation, he said it's 99% the player's responsibility and 1% the manager. Mm. And I'm on board with that.
So, given all of this, Shaka, you first on this, and given the unholy mess that the Premier League seems to be so far this season, are Spurs, in their current state, genuine title contenders under Jose Mourinho?
Absolutely, yes. For as disappointing as they were in the opening game against Everton, they've been simply brilliant ever since. Never mind the 2 points drop with that handball against Newcastle and somehow contriving to throw away a 3-goal lead against West Ham. But for those, Spurs would be comfortably sitting on top. If Gareth Bale regains anything near to full fitness and is a significant contributor to the second half of the season, Spurs can give the best of the Premier League a healthy run for their money.
Robbo, what do you think? Are they going to be there when the dust settles?
I don't think they're going to actually win the title. They could be contenders, but I still don't fancy them defensively. I think they're playing more attacking football. They're playing some great attacking football when Kane and Song are playing at their very best. But in midfield, I don't like Harry Winks as a defensive midfield player, and I'm not sure he's got the centre-halves right at the moment. Sanchez, I think, can still have a mistake in him, and Alderweireld's not quite the player he once was. So I don't think Spurs are going to have quite enough.
Don, been a long time for Tottenham.
It's going to have to wait as well, because I don't think they can win the title. I think there's too many teams that are better than them. Yeah. I think they've got parts in their game where they're getting close, top end of the pitch for sure. But I agree with Robbo, when you watch Tottenham and you watch Eric Dier and Davinson Sanchez, who's just lost that little bit of confidence. Midfield, I think, is a problem. Højbjerg's been brought in to stiffen that midfield up, but doesn't really have any creativity. Sissoko, you know, brings really good legs and energy in the middle of the park. But Robbo's correct when he talks about Harry Winks. You know, he's a safe pair of hands when the ball's at his feet. He can pick a pass, but his range of passing is not good enough. So when you sort of analyse where they're at, I think they're close, but I don't think they'll get anywhere near Man City and Liverpool.
Well, meanwhile, guys, a much more comfortable night across North London. Arsenal, very easy victory against Dundalk. They are joint top with Molde after two games at the top of their Europa League group. However, rather sterner test awaiting the Gunners on Sunday. They go to Old Trafford to take on Manchester United. Shaka, start with you. What do you make of this game? We were about ready to run Ole Gunnar Solskjaer out of Old Trafford when Spurs went there and won 6-1 just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and listen, Manchester United come to this one full of confidence, as you could fully expect. Every time Ole Gunnar Solskjaer needs a result, he seems to get it. And I thought that performance against Leipzig was I certainly didn't see it coming. It was incredible to witness. and they certainly have momentum in their corner. At the same time, Arsenal just seem to threaten to want to break into this top four, threaten to be one of the big boys again. But sometimes you see them play and you just wonder if you know, how it's going to come or where it's going to come from. And outside of Aubameyang, do they have really what it takes? I'm leading Manchester United in this one. They have momentum. Certainly they have confidence. And right now I'm struggling to see that spark, that or a similar spark coming from Arsenal.
Going to be a good game, Stuart. Robbo, who's going to take it?
I think Manchester United, they come into the game in form. I think I like the diamond he's had in midfield in the last couple of games. I think they'll look at Arsenal's back three and look at Xhaka, who's been playing on the left-hand side of a back three. He played in the middle tonight, but there's a player that you can run behind. If Rashford plays at his very best and keeps running off the back of him, he's going to be a real threat. So I would just go with Manchester United. And Arsenal in the top third against Leicester weren't quite dynamic enough. So Manchester United by the odd goal.
You see it that way, Don?
I do. I mean, I like the look of Arsenal. I like the look of what Arteta's bringing. And they got a good win tonight without Aubameyang, without Lacazette, and without Thomas Partey. All will be rested for the weekend. But I just think momentum, as Xhaka said. I mean, United haven't got, you know, great form. I think it's their worst home form, I think, in 30-odd years. So the momentum's slightly against them in terms of the league. But beating Leipzig by five, I mean, that's an astonishing win. And Marcus Rashford, the man at the moment, getting a hat-trick. I just see them being far too strong at the top end of the pitch. I expect a great game, and it could be something crazy like a 4-2 Man United win.
Hope you're right, Don. That would be really something rather special. That is the Sunday lunchtime kickoff in the US. As you look at the entire Premier League fixture list for the weekend, starts with Wolves on Friday night, ends with those two games on Monday at Fulham and at Leeds.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Every week, the Serie A Awesome podcast. All the events on the Italian peninsula dissected and chewed over. Nikki Bandini and Mina Rizzucchi are regular parts of that podcast. Integral parts, I would say. And they join us now. Stuart Robson, also on board. Hi to all of you. Juventus is what we want to talk about first, because things are not going well for the old lady in Turin. The Andrea Pirlo experiment, if we can call it that. What do you make, first of all, Nikki and Mina? Nikki, I'll start with you, because I know you talked about Juventus a lot in the podcast. That was before their defeat to Barcelona, where they looked anemic at best. What's going on?
There's so many layers to this question, Adrian. I think certainly Andrea Pirlo should not be above criticism at this point. I think when you look at the tactics that we saw in this game against Barcelona, there was a lot of shock, including from me, when this team sheet came out that looked like it had five attackers in it. And frankly, it did kind of try to have five attackers in it when Juventus had the ball. You had Juan Cuadrado, it was a 4-4-2 when they didn't have the ball, notionally a right back, but he would join the attack when they had the ball. You had Dejan Kulusevski and Federico Chiesa on the wings. They're both joining the attack when they have the ball. You have Paulo Dybala and Alvaro Morata in the attack when they have the ball. And you have all of these options and absolutely no idea of who's operating in which space, because you had Dybala, Morata and Kulusevski all drifting into this space on the right-hand side, all crowding things up, all creating no options to pass to. And every time Juventus had the ball, frankly, it looked like there wasn't a plan, even though you had all of these talented players going forward. I just think there's no cohesion in it yet. And look, I have a lot of sympathy for Andrea Pirlo. I think when you look at how little time he's had, no pre-season, coming into a job with a lot of new signings indeed as well, Kulusevski and Chiesa, both of them coming in the summer, but it doesn't look good. There's no plan. And I think at some point, because I know he's Andrea Pirlo and we all want him to succeed, but at some point you do have to look at the manager and say, what are you doing to fix this?
And Mina, that's the point, isn't it? Because Andrea Pirlo does seem to be getting a pass thus far. And I know you were a big proponent of his appointment at the time. But, you know, if this was Maurizio Sarri, if it was Antonio Conte, they would be getting slated right now, wouldn't they?
Yes, Adrian, I like that you remind everyone that I'd bought somebody who wanted Andrea Pirlo. But it is a case of why it's different for him than it is for the likes of, you know, Maurizio Sarri or, like you mentioned, Antonio Conte, is because they came in already as coaches who had coached at the top level. And, well, especially with Sarri, he had just won a European final with Chelsea, albeit the Europa League. So it obviously is different expectations when we're talking about Andrea Pirlo, who just handed in his dissertation on football and is allowed to actually be a football coach. So obviously he's more a coach in theory than one in practice. And so I was happy to sort of go with the ride of building from the beginning. But I really did think that when it comes to him as somebody who understands football, that the experiments that he would do were a little bit more logical, that they would come from a place that I would understand. But it seems to me that he's building the team from the front, that he cares the most about, you know, how these five attackers will line up at the top. And really, frankly speaking, when it comes to building a team, that you really should start from the bottom, organize your defense, make sure that everything seems to be well done and everyone knows their position between midfield and defense, and then you can focus on all the movements and attack. But when he mentioned in his post-match conference after Barcelona that their desire was to try to make the most of Sergio Roberto perhaps being pulled out of possession, it's like, I don't think that offense is where you should be focusing all this attention. You are facing a side that is Lionel Messi's Barcelona. You have a midfield that's really void of any leadership. You're without Giorgio Chiellini. He certainly has his alibis because there were a lot of absences. But some of the decisions he's making and the way that he's going about this Juventus job just seems to me that it's like, let's just see what we can do in attack and we'll think about the rest later.
Robbo, put your coach's hat on for us as someone who's seen a lot of Juventus over the last decade. What do you make of the experimentation that Andrea Pirlo has been conducting early on here?
When you go into a football club and you haven't got much time to work, you have to get the base right. And whatever your game plan is, simplify it to start with. Then, as you go on through the season, you can make it more complicated. You get more rotation in the side. You get clever in the top third of the field. But what I see from Andrea Pirlo at the moment, he's trying to do too many things all at the start. So there's complication. The players don't quite understand what they've been trying to do. There's no patterns of play. And Nicky was right. They play four at the back when they're defending. And then when they get the ball, Cuadrado, whether he was playing on the left at the early start of the season or he's playing on the right, he then joins the attack. Kulusevski sometimes plays as a right wing back, and it's a position that doesn't really suit him. When Ramsey's played, he didn't play against Barcelona, when Ramsey's been playing, I've got no idea what position Ramsey's meant to be playing. He goes from the right side of midfield to the left side of midfield. He then joins in to become the number 10, all in the space of a couple of minutes. So he's got to get a base, a formation that works, get a starting block where they get it into the front players, play from there, and then you can expand it once you've got that sort of base game plan under the influence in that for the rest of the players. At the moment, it's not working for him.
Nicky, the defenders of Pirlo have been quick to point out, well, he didn't have a pre-season to experiment, so this is his time to experiment. But that was the same for all teams, wasn't it?
Yeah, just to pick up very quickly on what Robbo said, weirdly, I feel like Aaron Ramsey has almost looked like he does fit just because he is going everywhere. He's trying to fill the gaps that aren't being filled by the sort of plan, in effect. Because, as I said, like last night, everyone just crammed into one side of the pitch. At least Ramsey tries to find the space, but the lack of plan is a problem. I agree that the lack of preparation time is this sort of caveat. It's something that you can sort of mark as, okay, you would give him some extra credit, some extra time perhaps for that. But take a step back for a second. Andrea Pirlo has won one out of the four games he's been in charge of in Serie A. He's won one out of the two games he's been in charge of in the Champions League. It's easy to look at that league table now and think things have been better than they are because of that game against Napoli that was not played. Actual games that Andrea Pirlo has managed to win so far with Juventus is 2 out of 6. It's not great. I think any other person coming into that job with the expectations that Juventus have, which is to win the league and to compete for the Champions League, I'm not saying they're going to get fired at this point, that's ridiculous, but I think they'd be facing harder questions than he has so far.
But Mina, everything's going to be okay, isn't it, when Cristiano Ronaldo comes back? That'll be the solution.
Well, Ronaldo is the giant plaster on top of this team that just sort of makes everything okay, you know, because while a team is experimenting, he is there to score the goals, then it's almost like, you know, the exhibition you have and behind the scenes is where the real work happens and what Pirlo is trying to do with this team. But I do struggle to condemn this man straight away. I mean, of course, he's not doing a great job right now of being the coach of Juventus, but he is not without his alibis. And I think the real questions should be aimed at management. There's no point buying the cherry on the cake that is Ronaldo if you don't actually have a cake anymore and you keep selling off its parts and perhaps not really renewing it adequately. So what you have right now is a very imbalanced team. There is a lack of leadership. You threw on too many kids in the front line and hope that they would do something special. They were trying to be led by Paulo Dybala, who perhaps doesn't really have the character or charisma to lead that front line. And I think that at the moment, the team is also without big absences. You know, Giorgio Chiellini is the heart and soul of that side, and I think he's important to it. Ronaldo is, of course, you know, a leader in the same way that we talk about Zlatan Ibrahimovic at Milan. He's a guy who can score you goals even if the team's doing badly. He showed that against Roma. Alexandra is another miss. Matthias de Ligt is another miss. So when you consider all of that put together, yes, that is, he does have his alibis, but of course there are other things to consider. So many red cards in his games, you know, what's going on with that? Why is there such a lack of tactical confusion? Perhaps it will all come together. Giampiero Gasperini certainly made it all come together for Atalanta after his bad start. But at this moment in time, like I said, there isn't even sort of the understanding there is no progression. That's what it is. There's no idea how this is going to move forward.
Robbo, are you buying Mina's rather impassioned defence of Andrea Pirlo?
He's an inexperienced coach, and inexperienced coaches, when they go in and things don't quite work for them straight away, he's trying too many things all at once. He's got to simplify it. This is the system we're going to play. I want you to stay in that position. These are the patterns of play. This is how we're going to get the ball into the front. This is what we're going to do when we haven't got the ball. At the moment, even he had Bonucci trying to come out into midfield and go beyond the midfield at one point. He's got Cuadrado playing in high positions when it's not on to play in high positions. He's got Kulusevski playing as a right wing back. He's trying to complicate it too much. He's just got to settle down, find a pattern of play that works from a game plan, simplify it all, and I'm sure Juventus and Andrea Pirlo will be okay.
Robbo, Alvaro Morata in that game achieved the unthinkable hat-trick of offside goals for Juventus. Is he just unlucky?
To a certain degree, he's a little bit unlucky. I mean, he's got to be looking across the line, but you're talking about inches. And when you're talking about inches, it's difficult. You're trying to break offside lines. And I mean, he's only, is it 1 foot ahead of the defender? I think on this occasion, he's very unlucky. He makes some very good runs. I think he's done okay in some of the games he's played. And I think if he can get his confidence, it'd be a massive bonus for Andrea Pirlo when he plays in that centre-forward role.
Nicky? Morata, there's a good player in there, isn't there? I mean, you don't get signed by Juventus, Real Madrid and Chelsea without being a good player deep down.
Yeah, and I would argue that he's played his best football at Juventus. I think he's one of the players in this period who, for me, emerges with credit. I don't think Alvaro Morata's playing badly. I don't think you do him down too harshly for the fact that he's had all these goals disallowed. It feels like a uncomfortable pattern because it's not just this game in the Champions League. It's the last two in the league as well he's had goals disallowed. But I still think he's playing well. I think he's finding spaces. At least he is putting himself in positions where a few millimetres here or there, he would be scoring goals. And he has scored goals as well. So for me, he's not the problem. I think he's playing well. My only concern with Alvaro Morata, frankly, is how he's going to fit when Ronaldo comes back, because they didn't do great together when they were in Madrid. And the very, very limited sample that we've seen of them together at Juventus, I'm not sure how they gel.
Mina, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm never going to say anything bad about Alvaro Morata, because I think that in that shambolic performance that was Juventus's against Barcelona, he was really the leader who was trying absolutely hard to battle forward, to try to find the goals, to penetrate the defence. And frankly speaking, it's like Robbo said, you know, it was a few inches here and there, which firstly tells you a lot about Barcelona's defence, because I think they walked away with a lot of credit that I'm not entirely sure they're deserving of. Because, you know, this was, like I said, a shambolic performance by Juventus. Juventus. But I do think that once he finds his rhythm, if there is a tactical setup that is clear where everyone knows what the strategy is and where they're supposed to be all the time, it will help him improve. But he's always that man who sort of hangs there and tries to time his runs. He's going to get it wrong, like Inzaghi did so many times. But so often or not, he gets you the goals, and he does so in important matches. It's just a shame he couldn't get one against Barcelona for the Juventus fans.
Okay, Robbo, switching teams and switching big strikers in Italy. Reports that Romelu Lukaku is going to be out for Inter, most definitely against Parma, very possibly their next Champions League against Real Madrid, which is a game I know you are calling. How big a loss, how big an impact might this be for Inter?
It's a massive blow because Antonio Conte, the way he plays, he wants his centre forward to be the focal point of all the attacks. Yes, he plays with another striker up there, but it's Romelu Lukaku that's that focal point. They get the ball into him quickly. The whole point of their midfield spreading and they playing out from the back is so they can get it into him, and then they play off there. And he's been good enough over the last year to not only receive the ball and bring others into play, he's been good enough to turn and run past defenders and score goals himself. So I think that link-up play between the two front players is never quite as good when Lukaku's not playing. So I think it's a massive blow for Antonio Conte and Inter, not just in Serie A, but in the Champions League as well.
Yeah, Nicky, in the context of that Champions League group, this is a massive game immediately, isn't it? Both of them off to really dodgy starts.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know who comes into this feeling worse about how they've started, to be honest with you. I feel like Inter shouldn't feel great about things, but look, they didn't lose at home at least, which Madrid have already done. Lukaku's a huge loss. You can't overstate it. I think he's been carrying Inter so far this season. I think he carried them in certain games late last season. At their best, this Inter team under Conte had a beautiful dynamic between Lukaku and Lautaro. But Lautaro's not in a good... I don't think he's in a good headspace at the moment. I talked about this on the Serie Awesome podcast. He's out of form on the pitch, but I think if you watch the way he reacted to being substituted against Genoa, throwing a real tantrum about it. I think there's ways that can happen that make you think, good, okay, this player is serious and he's frustrated and he's going to work to get better. I just thought he looked like a kid who was throwing his toys out of the pram, and I'm really concerned about where his mindset is. Because right now, with Lukaku out, Lautaro has to step up.
A lot of pressure, Mina, on Inter on Tuesday.
Yeah, I think so, considering the results have been rather disappointing in the Champions League. But I think that Antonio Conte can really use this opportunity to actually try to introduce something different, because, I mean, I think that this was explained by Mönchengladbach and some of their players after they played against Inter. And they said, you know, the tactic is that they look for Lukaku. And that was what we would try to do, was we would try to starve him of the ball and try to stop him as much as possible. And I think that's what the blueprint has been when you try to stop Inter going forward, is you focus a lot on Lukaku because he is the man that they will look to. They will deliver crosses to him. They will try to play him in. And he works so hard for that team. But I think this is an opportunity to try to make things less reliant, to try to make Inter a little bit more unpredictable. So perhaps let's introduce a different style of play, maybe make it a little bit more unpredictable through the middle. I don't know who Conte is going to try to put up there, but Lautaro Martinez, I agree with Nicky, is in a bad place. But I think there needs to be a way of trying to find different styles of getting into the ball into the net, rather than always looking for Lukaku, always delivering a pass there. Of course, Barella is going to suffer because they have this great chemistry on the pitch. And really, Antonio Conte needs the points, because if he wants Inter to continue buying these wonderful players, he needs to do well in Europe. That pays him the big bucks.
I want to get all of your thoughts. I'll start with you, Robbo, on what was an insanely entertaining game for plenty of right reasons and plenty of wrong reasons too. Milan and Roma, that 3-3 draw. Of course, the headlines were the two penalties awarded. Soft doesn't even begin to describe them, Robbo. The referee and the VAR official involved in that game, Giacomelli is the referee, have actually been suspended for two games. What did you make of what occurred?
Well, obviously, you know, I don't think they were the right decisions. They were soft penalties. One of them should have been a free kick the other way. Then the VAR had the right to overturn it and ask the referee to go and have a look at it on the side. Obviously, didn't think the referee had made a clear and obvious error. Suspending them, I don't think, helps. It's obvious to me that the VAR doesn't understand, if he understands the laws, he doesn't understand football in general terms. He doesn't understand what was a foul and what wasn't a foul. Who's trying to shield the ball and who's making the tackle? That's the problem. One player was trying to shield the ball and he got penalised when the other player was making the tackle. And just suspending them, I don't think helps their referee. It doesn't help their understanding of the game. They've got to be sat down and talked to and get them to understand exactly what the laws of the game are and understand football in general.
Yeah, Nikki and Mina, you talked about it on the Serie A Awesome podcast. Does it make any more sense a couple of days later?
No, I mean, I was laughing at Robbo there, but he's right. What happened with Pedro and Benacer on the first penalty was... it was incomprehensible. It was a foul by Pedro, and not even a little foul. It was sort of studs into the ankle foul. Whatever happened with Giacomelli in the initial decision, I appreciate that a referee on a pitch might, for whatever reason, not see something clearly. Nasca, the fourth official looking at the monitor, I just don't understand exactly, as Robbo said, what comprehension of the rules you have where you don't see that as a foul by Pedro, because it's a glaring foul. And it's a shame, because actually it was a hugely, hugely entertaining game of football. Still wound up being an entertaining game of football, but I think it got cost something because of that first penalty and then what felt like a make-up penalty at the other end.
Mm. Amina, so two-game suspension is actually going to be a month because of the international break that comes at the end of it. Do you think that's fitting?
I think so. I think that it is a case of, you know, you performed badly, so you will get your punishment and you have to serve that. And I think that is the stain on their reputation and perhaps a warning threat to everyone else to try to do a better job. There needs to obviously be adjustments because so many European leagues are obviously complaining about VAR and the way that things are being handled by the referees. There is this case of sometimes one wonders whether the referee is sort of taking a back seat because he knows VAR will correct those mistakes. Of course, that didn't happen this time around. And that is the true fear of everything that's going to happen. But at least, you know, if we'd want to be positive about this, there was a make-up penalty. So it was all fair in the end. Everyone got a penalty each if Unifoot was wrong.
Yeah. All right, finally, guys, I want to get your thoughts on the forthcoming Serie A weekend. Really interesting weekend we got for you. Well, all the games are on ESPN Plus, of course. There are no real clash of the heavyweights. So, Stuart, I'll start with you. If you had to pick a game you had to watch this weekend in Italy, what would it be?
Well, I have got a game to watch, and that's Sampdoria against Genoa. So it's a derby. It's always an exciting derby. It's a great contest. They don't particularly like each other. It's obviously a shame there's no crowd there, but Sampdoria have had some poor results this season. They put in some great displays. They beat Atalanta 3-1 last time out. I expect them to win the game, but it's always a very good game between these two clubs.
And that's the Derby della Lanterna, yeah?
Yes, that's
yeah,
it.
You there got you it. Go. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've been working on it. Mina, you go next.
Oh, there's quite a few, to be honest. But for me, I'm really enjoying watching Roma. I like the work of Paolo Fonseca. I think he's a very talented coach. And I think that, you know, they've just got so many wonderful players with such beautiful technique and wonderful feet on them. So I want to see how they're going to do against Fiorentina. Now, Fiorentina have been a side that have scored some fabulous goals, that have some great players. And obviously, Castrovilli, that we mentioned a lot on the Serie Awesome podcast. And Frank Ribery is another. But the problem with Fiorentina is that they always score the goals, do really well, and then tend to fall asleep and have a coffee. So I want to see what's going to happen this time around and how long Pepe Aquini will last on the bench for Fiorentina and what will happen against Roma.
Yeah, you suspect there may be a coaching axing coming up at the end of that game, perhaps.
Well, there are reports that Maurizio Sarri might have just freed himself from a contract, so that's an available
All
option.
Right. Nikki, you get the final say. What game is a must-watch for you?
Well, if the fans were there, I'd go with Robbo for the Derby della Lanterna because it's a real occasion in the city of Genova when that happens. But since they aren't, I want to go with a Napoli against Sassuolo. Napoli, again, just to remind everyone, already said it once, they've played four games this season. They've scored 14 goals. Sassuolo have played five games. They've scored 16 and conceded 9. There will be goals in this game. It will be end-to-end. Mina will be pulling her hair out because of the standard of defending that will be going on. But I think it should be real end-to-end stuff. And also, look, Napoli are playing like title contenders. Take out the game that didn't happen against Juventus and they've won them all. So they're a good watch every week at the moment.
Love it. Sassy Sassuolo. Can't get enough of them. Nikki, Mina, Robbo, thanks ever so much. Don't forget the Serie A Awesome podcast every week and our full schedule of Serie A games, all available on ESPN Plus. That ESPN News game as well. You have to be up early Sunday morning for that. Udinese and AC Milan. That's a 6:30 a.m. start time.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
All right, Shaka is back with us. And Shaka, not only are you back, your power rankings are back as well. And you have been ruthless this week. Talk us through it.
Yeah, a whole lot of changes from last week. You lose or you draw, every chance you're going to be out. Saying that a couple have survived, which I know Stuart Robson would take exception to, but just give me a minute. Bayern, best team in Europe bar none. Never mind that blip against Hoffenheim a few weeks ago. They're back top of the power rankings. AC Milan, they haven't lost since March when they play in the Europa League, so therefore Bayern gets a little bit of a nod. Even without Ibra, they won today. Oh, Ibra came off at halftime. Benfica, in at number three, they're still 100%. Liverpool, never mind that blip against Villa and then the draw against Everton. I thought they were hard done by against Everton. They're in at four. Ajax, in at five, especially after they broke records recently. Dortmund in at six. Napoli, seven. Antwerp get a nod, top in Belgium, and then you beat Spurs. I think you deserve some love this week. Speaking of Spurs, they're in at number nine. Even though they lost to Antwerp, I still think Spurs are playing some of the best football in the Premier League. And then in at number 10, and this is a special inclusion for our resident Scotsman, who's not really a Scotsman, Don Hutchinson, Glasgow
Get
Rangers.
Get in there.
In Go on, at number 10.
Take it away,
That's
guys.
Right. Shaka, I knew you'd appreciate that,
Shaka,
Don.
You contradicted yourself. You contradicted yourself, Shaka. You said any team that draws or loses, out. And then you said, oh, Spurs lost, but they can still stay in at number nine. How does that work?
To every rule, there's one exception.
Even if you break your own rules.
Everybody knows that.
Hey, not a lot
to every
of
rule is one exception. This week is
Spurs. No love for Atalanta. Everton are binned. Villa, yeah. Binned.
Yeah.
It's a harsh school.
Ruthless.
Yes, it is.
Absolutely
ruthless.
It's a
hard school.
I had no idea we were watching two of the top 10 teams in the world watching Antwerp and Spurs play today as well. So,
good job we watched it then.
Yes, indeed.
They didn't either.
Everton, Villa, Atalanta, Sassuolo, goodbye. Will they ever return? We shall see. The next edition of the Gab and Jules podcast will return. You can back download today's edition. Just came out at ESPNFC.com, the place to get it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and... The Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Now then, over on the website, ESPNFC.com, on a weekly basis, you can read our column, Yanks Abroad. Conrad De La Fuente under the microscope. The scouting report on the 19-year-old who's still very much part of the Barcelona system. Also in the column, lots of talk about who might be leading the line for the US men's national team. Remember, they have a game coming up in November against Wales in Swansea. Some of the European-based players currently under the microscope who may get the call-up. We know all about Josh Sargent. Aaron Johansson, could he be back at the age of 29? He's been rattling in the goals in Scandinavia. Other lesser-known names like Sebastian Soto, Emmanuel Sabi, Hadji Wright, we've seen him before. Lots to digest in the Yanks Abroad column. Check it out on ESPNFC.com. Final note today, we showed you some highlights from MLS a little earlier in the show, including another defeat for the Los Angeles Galaxy. That proved to be the final nail in the coffin. News just breaking that Guillermo Barros-Schelotto has been fired as the coach of the Los Angeles Galaxy. The Argentine lasted not even two full seasons and losers of eight of their last nine games. That did for him. Scalotto has gone. We are done for the show. However, we will answer the question, what happens when you put three former West Ham United players on the same screen during extra time? Don, Shaka and Robbo will be answering your questions. All right, away we go. First extra time I've had the pleasure of conducting for quite a while. I've got a pink bit of paper as well, full of questions ready to pose to these three ex-Hammers. We'll get to that actually later. Three West Ham United legends in Don Hutchinson, Shaga Hislop and Stuart Robson. I'll save the West Ham question. Madu, Don, for you, first of all, and this is off the back of the Karim Benzema, Vinicius set to, telling him not to pass, or Mendy not to pass to Vinicius. Don, have you ever told your teammate not to pass a ball to a teammate or to another player?
No, I wouldn't dare ever say that. Not a chance. I don't know how you can get away with that. listen, we've all been in games where you've been playing poorly and maybe subconsciously you've not given someone the ball because you think they might be having a bit of a nightmare 10-15 minutes, but we've all had them. But I've never ever and would never tell anyone not to pass someone the ball.
Not even in jest, Shaka? Has it ever been said if someone's having a real stinker?
Well, I was about to say, I've told players not to pass the ball to me. Have you ever seen me kick?
That's a whole different category.
You could be giving me the ball there.
I mean, Shaq, there was a moment in the 4-4 draw against Charlton. I didn't think about a back pass to you.
Yeah, that's right. That was guaranteed 5-4. Don't worry about that.
Stuart, Robert, what did you make of it? I'm sure you heard Stevie and Craig weighing in on this. Stevie said it's evidence of rottenness in the state of Madrid. Is it?
I would suggest so. If players are starting to talk about other players and say don't pass in the ball, I mean, how does he think he's going to affect another player to say you can't pass in the ball? Suggesting that he's, I mean, it's a form of bullying in some way, a senior player trying to put down a younger player. I think it's all wrong. I can't ever remember it taking place when I was playing, although I do remember one of our centre forwards when we used to have a kickoff and we just conceded a goal, chipping it to our left back and making it difficult for him, so the crowd booed him, which I don't think was the best idea at the time.
But Marker, by the way, are reporting that Benzema and Vinicius have cleared the air today in training, so I guess there's that. Mentalist Medic, why do the lads keep saying all United, Manchester United that is, do is counter-attack? In the Leipzig and PSG games, we clearly dominated both games. We didn't sit back waiting for them. Yet there's a tag United have that they are a counter-attacking team. Isn't it time to move past that, Don? Isn't it time?
No, I think it's fair. I think when you watched Man United over the last 18 months, I think their best performances have came when they've counter-attacked sides. I mean, I'll go back to last season when they had a real tough week and Ollie was under pressure and they played Man City and Tottenham, and they played counter-attack and football in both games inside the same week and beat the pair of them. There is a thought process where Man United have to evolve, and in the two games that the guys mentioned in there, I thought their possession stats were a whole lot better. But I still think if you ask Man United in any big game across Europe what style you're going to win in, or what potential style you're going to win the game in, I would suggest it would be counter-attacking than against teams that we've seen in the Premier League when they've had possession against teams like Brighton, when Brighton hit the woodwork five times, and teams like when they played Crystal Palace and Crystal Palace beat them. So I think their best results have came when they play counter-attacking football.
Robbo?
Yeah, I mean, even when you're trying to dominate a game, if you want to make sure you get more possession, you want to be on the front foot, there's still going to be moments in games when you falls back, and then when the ball changes hands, you can counter-attack. And I think that's what Manchester United have done very well. That's when they look at their most threatening, as we saw last night against Leipzig, because they were 1-0 up. Leipzig are trying to dominate possession. They're trying to get back into the game. And every time Manchester United picked up the ball from that moment on, space in behind, Rashford and whoever else was running in behind, that's when they looked at their most threatening. So it can happen even when you're trying to dominate the game.
And besides, Shaq, is there anything wrong with being a counter-attacking team? There's been some great counter-attacking teams. Somehow it's not part of Manchester United's DNA, apparently.
Yeah, well, when you're Manchester United, and particularly in the Premier League, you're not expected to just be a counter-attacking team. And I think that's where they've kind of struggled most, when teams have sat back and soaked up pressure, and they haven't been able to get that running game going. But you're right. I don't think there's any embarrassment to being a counter-attacking team. I remember Real Madrid of a few years ago being the best counter-attacking team in world football. That wasn't an issue, if that's who you are. As long as you defend well, you have good passes out to midfield. I don't see that as being a criticism worth really taking on. You know, if that's what you do, if that's the people you have, then so be it. I don't get it.
All right, Vishal has teed us up for an interesting two-horse race here. He poses this one: who's going to come back to life first, Paul Pogba or Antoine Griezmann? Now, who's your money on, Don?
Oof. I would probably lean towards being Paul Pogba, because I think he's got the tools to improve at any given time. I think with Antoine Griezmann, it just doesn't seem a right fit to me at Barca. And it's not because he's not good enough. I just think he hasn't got that turn of pace where Barca, I think now, are a team that look a little bit slow. And I think they need an injection of pace. I think with Paul Pogba, he's got all the talent in the world, plays in a different position, so you can boss games a lot more. So if I was leaning towards the two, it would be Paul Pogba.
Robbo, they both look great for France on a regular basis, don't they?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with Don. When Paul Pogba's playing at his very best, he can be one of the best midfield players in the world, and he's proved that on many occasions. With Griezmann, there's a lot better centre-forwards, a lot better wide players, wherever he wants to play, a lot better number 10s than Griezmann, even when he's playing at his very best. So who's going to be the better and get back to be a top-class player? It's going to be Paul Pogba.
Shanga?
Yeah, I agree. Listen, we've said this before. I think Paul Pogba makes great teams better, but he doesn't carry teams. So I think it's more likely that you see Manchester United add a couple of players and actually bring the best out of Paul Pogba. I don't see how it gets any better for Griezmann at Barcelona.
All right, meanwhile, ding dong, the witch is dead at Barcelona. We saw Bartomeu leave, and immediately they get a great result against Juventus. So it poses this question: now there's going to be different leadership. Do they have more chance to win the Champions League this year? Was that performance anything to do with a president leaving, Stuart?
It might produce a slightly better feeling within the camp, certainly in Messi's camp. He might then be more exuberant with the other players, but the president's not going to make the team bad or good. But it was a much better performance. There was more energy about it. There's more intensity. But I don't think it was any coincidence that Juventus at the moment are a poor side, with Andrea Pirlo getting most of his tactics wrong.
Yeah. Don, Craig made that point on yesterday's show. It was more about Juventus being bad, wasn't it, than Barcelona players being inspired by Bartomeu's exit?
Yeah, I think so. And Alvaro Morata scored a hat-trick of goals and all got disallowed by VAR as well. So it could have been a completely different story. And I go back to match day one in the Champions League last week when I commentated on that game against Ferencvaros. And They were awful, Barca. They won the game comfortably in terms of the scoreline, but the first half an hour of the game, Clement Longley and Piqué were all over the place, and they could have been 2-0 down. So bigger teams will have a field day against Barca. I think Coutinho's now got an injury. The only way I see this is being fixed if, you know, once the president does leave, and he has left, is when they elect a new president, they'll probably then look to bring Xavi in, who then come into the football club, have different ideas, and then he'll get the best out of Messi. Then hopefully for Barca fans out there, there'll be money to spend. Don't know where they're going to get that from at the moment. So I think in the short term, I don't think Barca are anywhere near in the league of Bayern Munich. They're the strongest team in Europe by far.
But Xhaka, can a change at the very top of an organisation actually filter down and have an effect on the pitch?
Right, I think it can have it had an effect on Lionel Messi, or can have a long-term effect on Lionel Messi, kind of given their relationship, and you know what Lionel Messi means to this Barcelona team. But going back to that Juventus-Barca game, I felt this was more a case of Juventus being unlucky. The three offside goals that Don mentioned, Dembele scores off a deflection, and then a last-minute penalty to seal it for Barca. So it's more Juventus being unlucky than Barcelona being all that good, in all honesty. Do I see Barcelona winning the Champions League as we sit right now? Absolutely not.
All right, three ex-Hammers on the panel. Doesn't happen too often. I don't know if this is a first. It probably has happened before. There's only one Hammer of the Year amongst you, though. Who was that, Robbo? You reminded me of that earlier.
Well, yeah, it was 87 to 88. I think it was Hammer of the Year.
It means
when they closed down Upton Park, I got to walk round the pitch as one of the Hammers of the Year. It was absolutely boring. I mean, great.
So, does that count, though, Robbo? Because, I mean, football was only formed in 1992.
If it wasn't the Premier League, it wasn't proper football, was it?
It was brought back, yes. That's right. It didn't exist before 92. So what did the three of you make of the start the Hammers have made this season?
Hold on, Adrian. I'm a Hammer of the Year, 98-99.
Were you?
I'd like to add my name to that list.
Robbo claims he's the only one on this panel. No, Robbo said he's the only one.
No, well, that's
exactly like Stuart Robson to be.
You put the votes in yourself, Xhaka. You can't vote for yourself.
Might I add, Hammer of the Year in West Ham's highest ever Premier League finish season. Carry on.
Yep. All right, so that's...
Who out of us three has been West Ham's record signing twice?
I'm figuring it wasn't Stuart.
Yeah.
Xhaka was signed twice by him.
Given that I was a free transfer both times, I'm the record cheapest signing twice.
So bargain,
and the West Ham fans still said you were too expensive.
So, Don, it was you that cost them all that money, was it?
Well, of course it was, Adrian. I was sort of teeing myself up, wasn't it? Yeah. Just to knock it out of the park.
Listen, Adrian, with all that money he got, I've seen the castle he lives at in Loughton, just down the road from West Ham. And he could have gone anywhere in the country, but they bought him a castle in Loughton. Unbelievable.
Hutchinson Towers, yeah? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
I wish.
So, what do you make of it?
Shaka Parsi's Maseratis there.
Yes, he did. So, the start they've made this year, what do you make of it?
It's been exceptional.
Yeah.
It's been brilliant. I was there for the first game, Adrian, the Newcastle game. And Newcastle walked all over West Ham, and there was doom and gloom everywhere. And I walked away from that game thinking, West Ham are going to be bang in trouble, because you looked at the six or seven fixtures after that Newcastle game and you thought they are really, really in trouble. The performance weren't good enough. Then all of a sudden, I think they put four past Wolves, I think three past Leicester, come back against Tottenham. So the feel-good factor at the moment, you know, they are flying.
Xhaka, you happy?
Ever since David Moyes tested positive for COVID-19, they've been great.
The secret formula for success.
I think what you also have to do, Adrian, is give a lot of credit to Antonio, the centre forward, because he's played everywhere else, but he's given them real drive in that centre forward position. He's running behind, he's good in the air, and it's a shame he got injured in the last game. They might just miss him.
All right. Well, finally, Robert takes us from the Hammers to horror films, which is an interesting segue. What horror film scared you the most as a child?
All of them.
I'll weigh in with The Omen first. I used to be terrified by The Omen, Damien and all that stuff. Oh, no. Even now, it gives me the
can't watch
the creeps.
Can't
the
watch
The Exorcist
him,
for me. Exorcist him. Did it for me. After that,
Exorcist. Nothing.
Which one, Chuck?
The Exorcist.
Yeah, I refuse to watch horror films after that.
Oh. That was it? That was the end of your... Yeah.
Can't watch
No
him.
More.
All right. Robbo, you must have seen a few.
No, I've got to say, X-rated I haven't ever titles. Watched a horror film. As soon as it says horror film, I go, no, what a load of old rubbish, and don't watch it.
I mean, I switched on a West Ham performance when Robbo was playing back in the 80s, and that was a horror performance.
Hey! Yeah, yeah, it would have been.
Never made its way past the censors, that one. It was cut off in its prime. All right.
I don't know how people watch them. How do people watch horrors? How do people watch them and go to bed?
I don't know.
No, I don't know. It's bizarre, isn't it?
And think they're entertaining. How do they think they're entertaining?
No. I don't know.
Dan Thomas, probably. Dan Thomas. I reckon he watches them.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah.
All right, Robert, thanks for that. The Hammer House of Horror. They used to be good, actually, those films. Well, they weren't really horror films. They were something else entirely. Thanks to all three of you. Thanks for watching. We'll be back same time, same place. Friday's edition of the show will be teeing up the weekend.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.